everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We are so happy to have you with us here tonight. We are live on Facebook and YouTube, possibly Periscope. We'll see as time goes by, but having some issues with that to start out with. But we do this broadcast, sponsored by a different, I guess one of our partners every week. And this week, Right Start Math is sponsoring this episode of SPED Homeschool Conversations. And so we provide this these broadcasts for you parents who are homeschooling kids with special educational needs or thinking about it. And looking for some resources on how do I do this and how do I do this well. So this month in October, we've been focusing on how do you do therapy at home. And tonight we're gonna talk about sensory diets. And I have two special guests with me tonight to share with us about that. And the first is Jason Shea from Lackey Kids. And the second is Matt Sloan from Sensory Fitness. Welcome, gentlemen. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Glad to have you here. So if you are joining us live, we would love for you to put in your questions, your comments as we're going along. And I'm going to be asking these guys some questions and they're going to be sharing a lot, but we definitely want to incorporate you in this conversation as well. So let's just kind of get started in getting to know both of you. And so Jason, Matt, whichever one of you wants to get started and let us know a little bit about yourselves and the businesses that you run that help families who have children with sensory needs.
Sure. Matthew, go ahead, Matt.
Sure, yeah, okay, I'll start. Thanks, Jason. Well, my name is Matt Sloan. I run a business called Sensory Fitness. I'm an occupational therapy assistant, and I specialize in sensory integration. I started my business, Sensory Fitness, in part, a piece of it, why I decided to branch off on my own was when I was doing therapy with kids and at the clinic, there was so much I wanted to be able to give to the parent to take home, but it was so hard to do that in like the few minutes you have in between sessions.
Right.
And during a session, and I'm just like dropping bombs on parents, and they're like, what are you talking about? Trying to understand sensory is pretty, to wrap your mind about it, if you're starting at kind of square one, it's kind of difficult. But so one of the reasons I do what I do is because I try to bring those practices into the home environment and educate parents. So part of what I do is a big part of what I do is I do fitness for kids with sensory struggles. That's a big piece. One-on-ones and small classes. With another piece of what I do is I do education, and that's going to before this, I was a teacher. I was a special ed teacher for like 13 years. So bringing the sensory thing back into the classroom was a big goal. I was because as a teacher, I would have found this stuff so useful. I thought I got it, but I didn't really get it. So that was one of the driving forces behind, again, bringing the sensory world to parents, teachers, to fitness instructors, to anybody who's working with kids. So that's a big part of what I do. And then I met Jason doing just that. And then he's selling, he has the sensory equipment and lots of cool stuff. And he's got some great ideas. So we instantly hooked up. And now we're doing that.
It's a perfect match. So tell us a little bit about yourself, Jason.
Sure. My name is Jason Shea. I'm a father and also an entrepreneur. And I usually call myself, I'm a proud father of an autistic genius. And the main reason why I even started my business right now, Lackey Kids, is actually back in 2013 when my son, he's actually 10 right now, back when he was three, when me and my wife heard about his diagnosis with autism. We were living back in Japan. So Japan as a country, like most of the Asian country, mental disability is a huge stigma. People don't like to talk about it. People don't discuss it, which lead to very lack of resources and opportunities. And to give you a perfect example, we used to live in Tokyo, one of the largest metropolitan area, have a single population as the city of New York. We can only find two therapy centers to take our son to. So that is not a very good situation to be when you have a kid with special needs. And our son is our first, so we don't really know what to do. So after a lot of debate, we decided to move to United States back in 2015 because we figured that's where we can give our son more opportunities and maybe to figure out how we can help him to with his life. So so shortly after we moved to United States back in 2015, we started to connect with a lot of other families that also have kids with special needs. Then we realized even in United States, there's still not enough support, still not enough products, still not enough information. Hence the reason why me and my wife started this business back in 2017. We start creating some sensory product and sensory tool that the kids can use at a homeschool setting or at the classroom setting. And really starting out as trying to find solution for our son, and at the same time also help other family like ours that can be benefited from the product and from different resources that we are putting out. So I'm really passionate about this, my mission as not a parent, but also a special education advocate, trying to advocate on what are the things that parents that need to know. And that's, I would say, special education, either you're homeschooling or you're going in the public school system, is a very sometimes overcomplicated system. It's really hard to navigate. I mean, Mac will tell you all about it, because even from a special education teacher's perspective, it is complicated. But a parent's perspective with no formal trainings on special education, you just feel lost when you first get into this kind of environment. So that's my mission, and my goal is to create product and offer information that can help families just like ours.
Yeah. I know so many of our parents relate to you. And I love that both of you saw a need and you were passionate enough to fill that need. And that's where your businesses run from. And that really speaks a lot about who you are and why you do what you do. So I just appreciate that. And thank you for letting us get to know you a little bit as we're kind of getting this conversation started. So and if you're just joining us, make sure that you join our conversation by making comments and putting them in the feed. As we're getting started, what specifically is a sensory diet? And how does that work? You know, what does that do for a child? And kind of just take us through that and explain what it is and how it's helpful.
Yeah, Matt, you can take that.
Yeah, sure. So a sensory diet has the word diet in it, but it's not have anything to do with eating, although it could. But in the sense of a diet, it's what your body needs throughout the day, just like a food diet, right? Being proactive is, I feel it's extremely crucial. So you can be proactive, right? Just like if you were to eat food. If you're proactive about the food you get, generally you buy the healthier food, you know, unless you like it. You know, you're in a donut, you need a couple donuts.
Right.
Generally, you're proactive about the food that you buy, and that therefore you get the healthier food, as opposed to you didn't prepare and you're reactive and you pass the Burger King and you get, you know, the food you put in your body, that junk food is still going to sustain you. It's still going to do the job, but it's not as functional. It's not as efficient. Same thing with sensory input. So getting your... All a sensory diet is meeting your sensory needs throughout the day periodically. And that's going to look different for everybody. It's going to look different it could be look different from day to day. You know, to simplify it, you know, we can kind of break it into like seekers and avoiders. So seekers are easy to talk about because they're kind of more obvious. But kids that are seeking sensory input, my son, I have two boys. One with kind of unique sensory needs, he's a tactile guy. He seeks tactile input often. And so what I do to provide that sensory input, to make part of his diet, is getting that input throughout the day. So we start off the day before he has to sit down at a computer for a virtual school, which he just turned six. We try to do a lot of jumping. We do a lot of jumping, crashing. I let him have his feet off. His feet kind of rub on. I have a Lackey Kid wiggle cushion with little spikes on the bottom. Things like that he can use before an activity that is going to require his attention, and if I can, do something during that activity. So that's what a sensory guide is. It's providing sensory input, which is also movement. 95% of it is movement-based. Before I'm going to ask a kid for his attention to focus on this thing, whatever that thing is, whether it's sitting at a desk to write, sitting at a table to eat dinner, to get in a car ride, things that are going to require your kid's attention. And if they have, if they're avoiders, kids that are hypersensitive, that are really aware of, typically that's like hot noises and highly visual, part of their sensory diet could look like getting some deep pressure before going to the supermarket. And while they're maybe giving them some headphones or giving them a hat or a hoodie to reduce their vision, as well as afterwards, because afterwards those kids that try to avoid those kinds of situations, they're going to be on edge. That anxiety is going to be high.
Right.
So they're providing those sensory strategies that's particular to your kids so they can just relax. And we all do it. We all do sensory. We all have sensory diets. I have coffee. That's part of my sensory diet. My alert level up, right?
Right.
When I'm sitting in these, when I was a teacher, I had to sit through meetings, or anybody who sits in meetings, you all do it. You all tap your foot. You all put your hand. You all stand up. We're stretching. We're moving. We're getting our body to a regulated state so we can pay attention to this, whatever this is, right? So that's also part of a sensory diet. We just have to be really intentional about it with some of our kiddos. And part of that is understanding sensory, then understanding the kiddo, and then understanding your kiddo's sensory needs. And that goes with talking to your OT or filling out a sensory profile or some other assessments, and anyone who works with your kid. But so that's my example. My explanation of a sensory diet, if that makes sense.
Well, yeah, it makes a whole lot of sense. And, you know, the fact that there's different things that are going to happen throughout the day, all of our days aren't the same. And so kind of having those components available and kind of building that diet around those activities or whatever is going to be happening, that that makes a lot of sense. And so, yeah. So, Jason, Now, how are you schooling right now with your son? Are you doing some virtual schooling at home, or is he actually going into school?
Oh,
I don't hear.
We are in Washington State. Most of the school in Washington State is still remote, 100% remote. So we have three kids at home. So my son being oldest, the other two, everyone's is remote learning pretty much.
Yeah.
So it's also, which make it really important to have some kind of sensory break in between, because now you're 24/7, that's sitting in front of the computer. That could be very stressful situation for both the parents and the kid.
Yeah. So you're taking full advantage of what you know and putting that into effect in your home. So that's awesome. So as we talk about, you know, people that maybe weren't even homeschooling last year and had, you know, no plans for doing so, what, from your perspective, are some advantages that parents have to take, that they have it at the ready because of this situation, that maybe their students didn't have when they were in a school setting, that they can take advantage of or kind of see the light instead of the darkness in the tunnel?
I can share a little bit on that from my personal experience. So because our son also have an IEP, and I think a lot of the listeners that is on the call or watching the show also might have an IEP.
Right.
And if you switch to 100% homeschool, I don't know if the IEP still is a requirement for that or not. I mean, correct me if I'm wrong, but...
It depends on what your school district's providing.
So what, for me, I learned this year is with my son's IEP is I know we have all the accommodations, all the different modifications, but are those really sufficient in the environment? That because of how much participation that me and my wife is putting into my son's school right now, we tend to see a lot of problems at a much closer. When we're sending the kids to the school, because we don't really see it until the parents conference until I award occasionally when we talk to the teacher when the big problem raised up. But when we interact with my son on a daily basis, we'll know that today is really like an off day where he couldn't get anything correctly, where he couldn't focus at all. And we'll try to figure out what kind of additional accommodation or additional modification we can potentially do it for him at home. And mm-hmm. I think that kind of observation or that kind of understanding is kind of lacking in the previous year when we are not doing the remote learning, where we're just not. I mean, I was working, but I wasn't working from home. I was still commuting to an office. So that makes it kind of hard because I don't really know what exactly is going on in my mm-hmm. son's school. But this year, it really gave me a brand new perspective on, of course, first of all, how hard it is to be a teacher.
Yeah.
It is how to incorporate everything with everything that's going on. While I'm still working from home, my wife is also trying to help with homeschool, and we have two other kids running around, and my younger daughter also have a homeschool, and trying to figure out all the puzzle pieces and also mm-hmm. realize what are the things that we as a parent may need to consider changing. I think that's really a really valuable lesson for both me and my wife.
Yeah, you can tweak and change things much quicker on the fly versus waiting until you kind of see everything blow up in the back end and then you try to decipher it from backwards, you know, from the yeah. end result to what really caused this and what, you know, getting back to what all that was. So yeah, definitely that is a huge advantage that we see that parents see in being able to be with their children in homeschool. And so for Matt, what as far as, you know, you've been in the school, but also you have private therapy, what are some advantages that also with being able to work with a private therapist and during all this COVID situation, have you seen advantages in this as well as just, you know, some things that you can tell parents that are beneficial in the midst of all these situations that they're in?
Yeah, these are pretty unique and crazy times. Mm-hmm. You know, we're having kids sit in front of a laptop to talk to a teacher that's not there, and you know, watching my own two boys do it, and the teachers try to do classroom management through virtual learning is tough on the teachers.
Yeah,
they're kind of building the plans, they fly, and mm-hmm. it's tough. You know, on the other side of that, it's kind of worked out for my youngest guy, because in kindergarten he had a rough time because he just mover. He needs to move.
Right.
So he had a lot of, you know, phone calls and emails and stuff like that. But at home, he's able to get the movement he needs. Right. I'm lucky. I have a sensory gym in my basement. That's where I am right now. And I have the kids do school down here. So the benefit, the advantage that I see, and I think all parents can take advantage of it, whether they have a sensory gym or not, incorporating movement as much as they can. Sitting down at a desk, learning doesn't have to happen at the desk. It doesn't have to happen. You know, on some level it does, because the only dipstick a teacher has to tell is if you're, the only metric a teacher has that if your kid is paying attention is this head that's right here. And if I'm looking over here, teacher thinks I'm not paying attention. So that's the only metric they have. But kids don't need to be in a seat. I'm in a rocking chair right now. Like that's okay. There's a thousand mm-hmm. things you can do to incorporate movement to help your kid pay attention, like to stuff like that. But besides that, kids can get more movement at home. It's just, you know, they can do chores. There's more interaction. It can be tough for parents to manage that. We're all living it. It's hard. You know, I'm also working from home. I'm trying to be here for my kids while they do school. And then now I have to go manage their movement breaks. That's
right.
But also we're just presenting options, or they can just kick them outside. And, you know, if you have a yard or swing, take advantage of those things. Things like that, allowing a lot more movement in that sense. Because at school, there's playground time, there's PE, but it's not, there's a lot of desk time, which can not always work in kids' favors, because they're sitting and they might be white knuckling through the day.
Mm-hmm.
At home, all the pieces, where now it's like that's one thing that I'm seeing for my son is that he's not what the
yeah.
He does some movement, then he gets 30 minutes in front of the laptop, then he gets some movement, then he has to do some work, then he gets some movement. So he's getting a ton mm-hmm. of movement that his body needs in order for him to do that tiny bit of work. My oldest son is right. hard for a longer bit of time, but he can, you know, it's the same thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's the advantage is allowing a lot more movement, trying, you know, doing things like chores, using, and it's also an opportunity to learn other skills like dishwashing, loading the dishwasher, laundry, that kind of stuff. That, those are the incredible skills we all need.
Right. Yeah. You're building in other things that as parents, we always want to teach, but we run out of time because school yeah. takes up such a large chunk of the day. Yeah. For our students, and here now we can say, oh, well, you need some movement? Well, let's work on this life skill.
So. Yeah. You know, I think one thing to remember is, like, the time your kid needs to learn is the direct instruction time is not really that long. It's, you know, think about how much one-on-one or direct instruction your kid gets during the school day. Maybe it's 30 minutes,
right.
maybe it's an hour. I don't, out of the whole day of school, my wife should know this. She's a principal. She knows all the stats. I don't remember the stats. I just know it's – so if you think about it, if you get 30 minutes solid minute time, you know, depending on the age, right? If you get 30 minutes or an hour of – or whatever of that instruction time, and then the rest of the time is not as organized, and that's okay. That's as much
yeah. –
they're learning that direct instruction because that's the peak learning time. There's a lot of passive ways to learn, but that's the teaching bit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So not stressing out about – I got to get my short kid sitting in front of the computer or blah, blah, blah. You know, if you can, maybe you have a teaching opportunity that you see during the day, take that. If the kid doesn't get the screen time in front of the, then, you know, kind of balance that out, if I'm explaining that.
Yeah, well, and a lot of parents who do parent-directed home education versus the school at your home, a lot of them will say, well, I only teach my child for when they're younger, about a half an hour total. To in high school, maybe two and a half hours, because that's all the direct instruction that student needs. It doesn't mean that they aren't learning all the time. It's just that's one-on-one back and forth. They're learning. I mean, my daughter just picked up a new instrument today and is already playing like three new songs. So,
and that, you know, that's math. That's, you know,
exactly.
And moving, if your kid's outside playing with a stick and climbing trees, he or she is learning. That's the building blocks to build on for all those other higher cognitive skills. So, like, allowing your kid to move and play and get muddy and do it, those are sensory strategies. We can call them whatever we want. They're moving. They're learning and they're interacting with the natural world. And those are all very important building blocks that a lot of times they miss out on because they're on the bus ride, they're in school, they're, you know, we're cramming them to soccer practice, and then it's time for whatever, all these other things we pile on top of our kids. Well, you know, it's us to the side. So allowing this time to just have some free time and stare at a tree for a half an hour is incredible. What that can do, just for the nervous system. I wonder how many kids will come back a little different when school starts up again, right? For better or for worse, hopefully for better.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah, I think even a lot of parents are realizing that there's like Jason was talking about, you know, just the dynamics you're seeing within your children, and I'm sure you're seeing some dynamics even between your children. And as homeschoolers, I know that was like the biggest fear of mine was my boys just like warred all the time, and it was. Let's just learn some character training and how we beat each other up.
It's constant at my house.
Yes. Well, mine are now 21 and 23, and they're each other's best friends. So I'll give you some encouragement on that end.
It's encouraging.
But yeah, it and we don't often relate a lot of what you're talking about is, you know, those simple elemental play things as being sensory input that we need in order to be able to focus on those really tough mental tasks that we do in front of computers or in front of books and those types of things. And it can be very difficult, especially for young children. So. So no matter if they are on a spectrum or have any diagnosed sensory need at all, I think, like you said before, Matt, that we all do it, you know, whether it's our cup of coffee or whatever. So that's so true. So I'm debating whether we should dive in or if we should hear from our sponsor and then go into the next questions. I think what I'm going to do is we're going to take a quick break. We're going to hear from our sponsor. I'm going to let Jason and Matt take a quick break off the camera. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk about specifics about sensory seeking children and sensory avoiding children and what activities and products and different things that you as a parent can look at as possibilities for being able to build into a sensory diet. So we'll be right back with that, and I'll give you two some time off the camera, and I'll bring you back in just a minute. All right, well, we want to thank Right Start Math for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. I'm going to bring up their website right there, rightstartmath.com. And Right Start Math will help your child understand, apply, and enjoy mathematics using games to learn concepts, strategies, and to practice math facts. This unique program uses visualization of quantities, de-emphasizes counting, and provides strategies, like visual pictures, for learning the facts. Place value is introduced early to solidify the children's understanding of that basic math skill. And the primary tool is an AL abacus. It's specifically designed two-sided abacus that's kinesthetic and visual. Do your children like to play games? Well, we have those too. We have Right Start Math has over 300 math card games that the children will love. They want to help your child achieve success by getting rid of the frustration and the tears while having fun. So definitely check out our sponsor, Right Start Math at rightstartmath.com. And if you're struggling trying to figure out, is this a good math program, or I don't know what we're using for math, or we want to switch to parent-led instruction and we need a math program, so definitely check them out. They're one of our partners here at spedhomeschool.com. So I'm going to bring my guest back, and we're going to continue talking about sensory diets and just how to actually go about creating a sensory diet. So welcome back, gentlemen, and just thank you for all the information you've shared already in the first half of our hour. And just, you know, we were talking about basics of sensory diets and why we need them, and I think hopefully we've all got that understanding. And I just want our audience to know, if you have specific questions, if you have a child, say that my child's doing this, what are they seeking, or what are they trying to avoid, or, you know, how do I figure that out? Definitely put those in the comments, and we'd love to discuss those as well. But like you had said, I think at one point, Matt, that the sensory seeking child is probably the easier one.
Well, I don't know about easier, but yeah, maybe easier to identify.
Right. Yes. Maybe not easier to live with.
Yeah. I have both ends of that spectrum. I have the avoider and I have the seeker.
Uh-huh. I think they come in pairs. I think I do too.
Siblings to be very opposite when it comes to sensory difficulties. I don't know why that is. It's just something.
Yeah. So a typical sensory-seeking child, how would you describe them or their behavior, or what would they do that would show that they're seeking sensory input?
Yeah, so they're seeking. They're looking for input to make them feel better, right? When I get up, I try to make it analogy anytime I can, but when I get up in the morning, I'm seeking that coffee because that's going to bring me to a regulated state. It's going to make my brain organized. It helps me. Okay, now I can deal with whatever's around. Your kiddo who's ping-ponging off the walls is looking for that input. And to be specific, you know, it's usually, it's not always the case, but it's usually vestibular input, which is the movement of my head, specifically my head, with balance. That's my vestibular input. My vestibular sense is located in my vestibulocochlear bone. It's in my inner ear, right? has to do with balance. And you know, if you just shake your head up and down, you're activating your vestibular system. They might be moving to get that input. And a lot of times vestibular kids, you know, when I activate the vestibular system, I generally bring that alert level up. So they might be seeking it for a lot of reasons, whether they don't feel it or they're just trying to get some sense of where their body is in space. There's some reason they're doing that. So vestibular kids look like, you know, maybe they're doing handstands, or they're the kids that are spinning in their chair, or they won't get off the swing. Things like that. Or if they get sick in the car, it kind of goes the opposite way. They could still be sleepers and avoiders at the same time, one the other day. But there's something off, maybe just something off about their vestibular. Then there's the proprioception, that's internal, like, awareness. So when I pick something up, I feel it in my muscles, and that's letting me know where my body is, like inside out, right? My proprioception seekers, they're the kids that, you know, they'll when you go to the grocery store, you want those kids because they're going to carry the milk jugs.
Okay.
They like the or they're going to hang from the monkey bars because they like that track. So they're feeling the pull and push of the muscles. Maybe they climb a lot because they're feeling it. They're using their body a lot.
Right.
And tactile can look similar. Tactile is outside in. It's light touch and deep pressure. They're the kids that, you know, are constantly touching everything, or they're hitting everything. Because when I run into something, that's tactile. I'm feeling it on the outside in.
And
our bashers. My youngest son, I thought he was a proprioception kid for a long time. And then one day I was at the beach, and he was just in the sand, and he was totally relaxed. And I'd never seen that before. Oh, of course, tactile guy. You can't diagnose your own kid, it's impossible.
But you're right.
I took it forever to figure that out. So, you know, the way I did things, I do things differently now. But knowing that helps. So, what was your original question?
So like having a sensory bin for a child that needs to have the movement and to have their head moving around, that's not going to work, because you have a child that's seeking sensory input in a different area.
Yeah. So, yeah, looking at those three senses right there.
Mm-hmm.
Working, if your kid goes to OT, they're the ones that are going to be able to help you with figure out what kind of sensory seeker your kid is. There's a couple of assessments they can do. All OTs are trained in sensory integration therapy, but most OTs understand the sensory piece of it. And that's cool. That's fine. And there's a lot of resources you can pull from to get more into the sensory piece. But, you know, kind of knowing that really, really helps.
Right. Definitely.
If a kid needs a sensory break, let's bust out the water beads. Well, vestibular seeker is not going to really care about that, or maybe they're going to, you know, and it's also important to understand that, you know, light touch and vestibular is a kind of an alerting sense. So if I'm doing these things, I'm doing these kinds of activities, or I'm seeking that, and then I let them go in the swing, or I let them play in the sand, and then I say, okay, let's sit down and do some work, their alert level's way up here. So understanding that, okay, well, let's end with some heavy work, because that's proprioception is always a good go-to. I don't know if you've heard the term heavy work.
Oh, yeah.
But when I move heavy things, and I push and I pull, and even if I'm blowing bubbles or sucking through a straw, that's really hard work, and that helps me kind of get organized. There's a reason why we feel better after we go to the gym. It's not that you got our blood pumping, it's our brain is like, okay, great. All these chemicals are released, and it feels good.
Right.
So just knowing the difference really helps in those specific three, to keep it simple, I guess.
Yeah. One thing I want to add to that is sometimes you just really don't know until you try. Like, for us, we have a small, like, sensory corner in our house that have different, like, sensory items, like fidget toys or, like, weighted blanket. That's you just don't know until you try it. Like, weighted blanket for my son doesn't really work as well as other kids. But I know for some kids that because we also sell weighted blankets, for some kids it works a miracle, but for my son it works as well. So it all depends on the kids.
Yeah.
That's a good point.
That is a really good point. Yeah, just trying things out and seeing how they go.
That's a great point, Jason. Yeah, don't be afraid to try something. it might blow up in your face. And I hate saying this, but it's kind of true. What works one day might not work the next day, but that doesn't mean you're going to the back side, right? Mm-hmm. Try it, see it works. Okay, you know that's going to work again. Put that in your tool belt. If you see consistently it doesn't work, then maybe chuck it out. But keep that in your tool belt. Keep that as, like, you know, part of your arsenal of tools for your car.
Uh-huh.
You know, sometimes you need this tool, sometimes you need this tool, but eventually you need this tool at some
point. Yeah, and I think that's also a reason why the concept of flexible seating is so popular in the public school system. And that's something we can also implement in homeschooling or remote learning environment. Just instead of using a chair, you can use a yoga ball. Instead of sitting, you can be standing. Instead of always being in the room, you could be doing the Zoom outside or some other places instead of always the same location. Sometimes that, I mean, at least for our kids, that really helped. So.
Yeah, the active seating it's just what Jason says, it's active seating or dynamic seating. And it's movement-based. You know, things like Jason's company has, like yoga balls and wiggle cushions. They're moving. They're getting that movement. That's active seating. It's all movement-based. I had a point I was going to make, and I lost my thought.
I was going to also say, too, it's got to be, you don't want to just stick to one thing, because it seems like these kids, you know, they want to be up, they want to be down, they want to be kind of all over the place. And so to not say, oh, well, this is your thing, and this is, you know, how you think best, it seems like just giving them options of variety may even be more helpful.
And that's a piece of it, too. Generally, a kid is going to, the seekers are going to seek things that are, they're doing that for a reason. So they're doing it because it organizes. So we want to give it to them in a functional way. If my kid's going to move, And if I try to clamp that down, I put my kid in fight or flight. And then whatever it is that I'm doing, they're not really going to learn as well. They might know a little bit, but it's like you or me.
Yeah.
We're putting, do we learn under stress? I don't learn under stress. I learn when I'm comfortable. It's like you have to go to the bathroom. You're not learning anything. You have to take care of that sensory need. The kids that are ping-ponging in and out of their seats or they're hypersensitive or whatever, that's a base need. It's a physiological need. That need has to be met. Generally, kids want to please. They want to do what you're asking them to do.
Yeah.
If they're not, it's generally a can't. Not so much a won't. It's kind of a mind, kind of a way to look at it. Like, would you ask a kid in a wheelchair to walk up the steps?
Right.
No, because maybe they can't. So some of our kiddos, they can't sit for a long time. There's some things they can't do because of that sensory need and effect. So when you start thinking that way, it does help you have a little bit more patience. Because sometimes I look at my kiddo like, what are you doing? And then I got to remember, okay, you can't do it. I have to say it out loud to myself. Okay, you can't do it. I got to help him. And then I, you know, because we're all parents and we have this much patience.
Right, exactly.
Anyway, with COVID, we have this much patience. But.
Yeah. So specific activities other than, you know, just the yoga balls and other things, of, you know, as far as like, you know, getting outside or things that you can have in your home that would be really helpful for a child who is a sensory seeking to build into their diet.
What do you want me to start? Specific activities, yeah. So, you know, for the seekers, it helps to identify what they're seeking, right? So that's then you just sit back and watch what he's doing. Okay, is he crashing into the wall? Okay, maybe that's kind of tough. Is he squishing him? Does he like to crawl in the small spaces? Are they doing handstands or rolling around? That could be the thing. So. Experimenting with kind of those three things, movement of the head, you know, you can do things like when you do movement breaks to get them to do somersaults and roly-rolies and stuff.
Oh,
like
yeah.
And jumping up and down on the furniture, that kind of thing. Because you're kind of getting everything, right? If I'm crawling over, if I'm doing an obstacle course, well, obstacle courses in living rooms are fantastic.
Oh, yes. I remember those days.
You're moving, you're getting that tactile input, you're getting the deep pressure, you're squeezing under pillows, maybe.
Mm.
So that's a good way to do it. If you have swings, utilize those. Linear swinging is always a good, nice and rhythmic and calming, and that's really good. When the spinners, that's maybe one thing you want to keep an eye on, because spinning, if I'm just spinning for a good amount of time and I stop and then I go do something, 4 hours later I could be melting. It's just spinning in particular. So if your kid's spinning, try to get them to 10, then 10 the other way, do and then stop and then do some heavy work, that kind of thing. So whatever it is you do, it's always kind of a good rule to kind of end with some sort of heavy work. Heavy work can look like stacking things. I like to use oral motor because that's a good way to fun, and if you're strengthening all sorts, you're doing all sorts of incredible things when you do oral motor. Oral motor is movement of the mouth, right? So think of like if I have a straw and I'm blowing bubbles into a soapy dish of water and making bubbles come up that has resistance, that's cool. Resistance is always good. Things like the lactic kid, I should have had some stuff, Jason. I didn't bring it. Jason sells some of these resistance bands that you can just pull on. You can put them around the seat for your kids to kick, or you can pull them. My son likes to wear his on his forehead because he gets a squeeze. It's tactile, right? Because it's outside squeezing. Right. It's not the same as weight. It's different. That's just kind of fresher, but like Jason was talking about the weighted blankets, some kids like that, some kids don't. If they don't like the weighted blankets, you can try
There you go.
I like those because they're really small. You know, they're made.
Right, because normally the ones you buy at the store, they're like 2-3 times the size for the stretching bands. Yeah.
Yeah, they're going to bring a call the way across the room and snap.
Right, exactly. I mean, trebuchets out of them or something.
Things like that. Wow. But yeah, so I kind of try to stick to those kind of, there's so many activities you can do within those senses. I mean, it's almost endless.
Right. Yeah.
Things like that.
Well, those are awesome ideas. Yeah, I love that. And Jason, do you have anything to add to that?
We haven't been doing this for a while, but in the summer, during summer, we used to have like a daily, like almost like a PE lesson in our house, where we just have kids do like jump rope or different activity in the backyard. And that usually helps, just have them go outside and do some basic activities. Like we're doing like jump roping. We're also doing like different games, like tags and different very simple games. But that usually just help the kids, because otherwise you stay in the homes all day, that can drive you crazy. So.
Right, yeah, especially for those kids that just want to stay on the computer or play a game, and you know, just to get them outside and to motivate them with an activity. I love that idea.
And Jason brings up a good point. Two points right there is that, he's talking about jumping rope and doing things like that. Like, that's not necessarily, you're getting some sensory input, but that's also, when you do things like coordinating activities, like jumping, throwing a ball at a target or catching a ball and keeping it rhythmic, that's a coordinating activity. Things like that, those are very regulating things. And you're working on all these other motor skills which are needed for, again, kind of those higher cognitive things. We ask them to handwrite, and they kick a ball. I mean, if they can't kick a ball or throw a ball, and they're having trouble and they hate handwriting, I might go, let's work, things like that. Working on kicking a ball at a target. Not just playing, but at a target, or in, if they can't, then make the ball bigger. Get a rugby ball or a beach ball. Big, really basic. And these are coordinating activities. And then I'm working on attention. Because that's attention. And if it's motivated, the kid likes it. Hey, that's
exactly
it. If I'm learning to play, I'm doing 10 times the amount of learning than if someone's forcing me to learn. If we're going to play and we're having fun with this activity, and like Jason's talking about, you're doing way more than giving your kid a worksheet and a pencil and saying, let's work on our handwriting. But if they're laying all these foundational skills like shoulder strengthening through catching and throwing the ball, and our core and joint stability and crossing midline, these are things that have to be there before we get into the fine motor piece or attention piece or eye-hand coordination piece. There's so much that is below, it's the iceberg below the water, that things like Jason was talking about, and having fun with your families is, I'd pick that over forcing my kid to do to do the work. That came out wrong. Of course, I'm going to have my kid accountable, right? I'm going to hold my kid accountable and have them do the work, but I'm also going to use these sensory strategies as opposed to behavior strategies, which is more of a top-down process, because I'm going to get more out of it.
Yeah, and there's so much evidence. I remember interviewing an expert on reading, and she was talking about how long ago, you know, and I guess long ago, 70s, 60s, but they would not even teach a child how to start reading until they could do a bilateral movement on the monkey bars, because there's something related to that within our brain, and it's just pointless. So there's so much that goes along with what you guys have been talking about.
I mean, your eyes have muscles. Those muscles need to be developed. It's not like you just suddenly can. Reading takes using my eyes. All those muscles need to coordinate. I need binocular vision. I need depth perception. I need tracking. Saccade. Yeah. I need all sorts of visual things that are built from monkey bars or grabbing a stick and hitting a tree or throwing rocks at the water. Things like that. Yeah. Those are huge foundational blocks that need to be built.
Yeah. So our kids are asking for it, and we need to give it to them.
You can create it with some of the point system you can set up. Like, I remember during summer, I was setting up like a reward system where my kids earn different points each day by doing chores or doing different activities, and in return, they'll get some iPad break. But it's just sometimes you can play around with that and see what works for your families, and they find it kind of motivating at the same time. So they can actually help around and wash some dishes or clean up their room, for example, to get to the point and kind of tie that back to the school potentially, too, so the kids can feel a little bit more motivated throughout the day.
Right. Yeah. For those that aren't as active. And so I guess that kind of transitions us more to those sensory avoidant children. And what do we do with them, and how do we help them to get their needs as well? I think they tend to be a little less blatant and out there, but yet we still see their behavior that says I need some help with a sensory diet as well, don't they?
Yeah. So the avoiders, you know, they're hypersensitive. They have their feelers way out, and they generally sense things and feel things more so than other people do. So, you know, it's not always the case, but it's easy to explain it this way. So reducing visual and reducing auditory can help, because that's generally you just kind of look at your kid. What do they avoid? Do they not like moving? I mean, maybe that's their vestibular system, and they don't like it. So just knowing that, you know, okay, I'm not going to force them to go on a 4-hour car ride, or maybe I'll do some strategies to help them before he gets in the car or on the roller coaster. But my avoiders, it's so hard to give like a general tip, but you know, having places for them to kind of reduce input. So, you know, having a small dark place for them to kind of go and hide with some, again, go to proprioception is always a good thing, like the heavy work, or deep pressure is also very common. Mm. So that can, having like a weighted blanket can help me deal with the noise better.
Okay.
Reducing the visual can help me deal with that, with the tag on my shirt, maybe. there's a lot of, you know, reducing the visual and the auditory can help a lot, with compression and that kind of stuff. Sometimes the kids that get labeled avoiders are kind of the lower energy kids, and that's not always the case. Mm. The lower energy kids can still be seekers. They're just seeking to, you know, maybe they're seeking in a different way. Mm. But to help, it's all about regulation. We want the thermostat to be kind of in a nice
spot.
Either way over here, way too hot, way too cold, or kind of zip-zap in between. So, you know, keep in mind, like if I'm doing something light touch tactile stuff, or I get my kid on a swing, that's always going to increase my alert level. Mm-hmm. That might be something you can try with kind of a hypersensitive kid, or excuse me, a lower alert level kid. and the proprioception and the deep pressure can, you know, bring that political defense. Getting off topic, but
yeah, but that also one thing that I want to mention, once hopefully the COVID situation is settled down, that people can really go out again and go to visit a lot of the public, like, for example, as arenas and stadiums. That's a wonderful program hosted by a different nonprofit organization called Culture City. They have a program.
Yes, I remember you talking about them.
Sensory Inclusive Initiative, which you can go and get a free sensory product when you, when your family is visiting, like NBA stadiums, zoos, aquariums. And that is an organization that my company actually partnered with, and we designed a product for their program. And it's all, most of the locations are free. And as part of the program, they not only provide sensory bags, and they also provide educations for the staff, for the on-site staff.
That's
so the staff
important.
We have the sensory. And they also help those zoos or NBA stadiums to build sensory rooms so the family can actually go to a quiet space in the case of sensory overload or like overstimulation, like Matt was just mentioning, those alternatives. But at the same time, you can also try to recreate that kind of sensory room in your own house or recreate a sensory corner. So in case when you notice your kids is a little bit overstimulated, you can take them to that space, that room or that corner, so you can have, they can have a transition. So that, that's another thing that we, a lot of the parents should definitely give it a try.
Yeah, so, you know, like I'm thinking, you know, on our homeschooling days and kids being overloaded with the input from video screens and, you know, online classrooms, and those are the types of kids with these kids that are on sensory overload, they're going to need that quiet space that they can retreat to just decompress throughout the day too, and to build that into their schedules. And is that kind of the idea of...
Yes, yeah, and we actually designed a very specific product. It's a writable weighted blanket. We actually out of stock, so I don't have one to show, but hopefully we'll have more soon. But
yeah,
that's a big product. Actually, I got an idea from Matt. I was talking to him 2 years ago about this idea. How can we make weighted blanket more fun to use? And one who brought up the idea, how about we make it like the kids can ride on it? So, I spent like 9 months designing and coming up with the idea and talking with manufacturers, but now we actually have a physical usable product that kids can ride on the weighted blanket itself using a water pen, and it's interactive. And that is also the product we are providing to Culture City's program for them to use in the NBA stadiums, in the zoos, and in the aquarium, etc.
Awesome. So as we're wrapping up, we've got less than 10 minutes, I want each of you to talk about your businesses and how people can find you. So Jason, just since you were just talking, lackeykid.com, and what types of products and things do you have on your website that people can dive into that you offer?
Yeah, so we do design all kind of different sensory products, mostly for homeschooling or for classrooms, including flexible seating product, which I kind of mentioned a little bit. And we have some fine motor product, like those tactile, the kids with tactile seating, that we have some fidget toys that the kids can, or the parents can try. And we also have a few different weighted product that is currently in our product line, that including a weighted neck pillow, weighted blankets, or different small, we don't have a full size weighted blanket, but most of ours is smaller. That's portable and it's good for like
that's important
schooling environment. And we also have a special offer right now. If you go to lackeykid.com/offer, you can actually get a free one of our fidget toy for free. All you need to do is just pay for shipping and handling. It's one of our fidget marble maze that a lot of the, we got pretty good feedback for a lot of the family that have been using it, especially for homeschooling and during that transition time. We are offering all the family that's interested that they can give it a try for free, just need to pay for the shipping. So.
Awesome. Well, thank you for doing that. Yeah, that's great. And yeah, and Lackey Kid is a partner with Sped Homeschool. We've got to know Jason quite a while ago, so I'm excited to have you on and sharing your information with us. And then Matt, how can people find you at Sensory Fitness?
Yeah, you can go to my website, sensoryfitness.org. It's under construction, so I apologize. So the best way to kind of, you can look at what I have to offer there, and then you get the best way to kind of get in contact with either a messenger via Facebook or email. But, you know, what I was doing before COVID was kind of one-on-one classes and small group classes in person. Going more the virtual route now. So Jason and I are offering a fitness class, virtual fitness class for kids, five through nine. I can't remember. What is it, 5 through 12?
Yeah.
So I've got that going on, and you know, it's a lot of sensory motor movements and things we've all been talking about. Also, I do lots of trainings for parents and for teachers and for fitness professionals. I've got a whole bunch of workshops I'm constantly doing for things you could do in the classroom, things you could do at home for parents. And then sensory motor, kind of bringing what I would do in sensory integration therapy into the fitness world. Any fitness professionals interested in helping kids with, you know, being very intentional.
Oh, that'd be awesome.
About the activities you do, as opposed to just general fitness. I try to bring the intentional activities into the fitness world, and PE specifically, I do training for them as well. That's kind of it for now. But yeah, so trainings and virtual classes to help with doing what we can to help bring some of this understanding to homes and teachers and other environments, so people can kind of understand where their kiddos are coming from and maybe why are they doing it. Why is my kid doing that?
Right, exactly. Why do they have to read upside down every day? I mean, that's the question I get. And I was like, well, maybe they just need to read upside down.
Why do they scream out their lungs every 5 minutes?
Yeah.
What's the reason for that?
Oh, exactly. Well, this has been a very educational and informative hour. I thank both of you gentlemen for your time. This has been so enlightening. And I thank our community that's been watching live. Didn't get any questions, but hopefully these guys answered your questions and more. I definitely have learned a lot in the last hour. I just want to thank both of you for taking time out of your schedules to share with us, and just for your hearts to help these to help families who have kids that are just looking for these sensory inputs and all that you do to help them. So thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
Awesome. Yep. And we're not done yet with this month of October, so we have one more week left of focusing on therapy at home. And next week we're going to talk about home strategies for language and literacy with a speech and language therapist that is also one of our partners. She's with Discovery Speech, Language, and Literacy. And so we are going to talk about that next week on just some things that you can do at home to help with those speech and language therapy goals that you have for your student, and how you can build on that outside of therapy. So we'll talk about that next week. But we also want to thank Right Start Math for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. And also for just viewers like you, we are a nonprofit, and so we thank you for your support, and just let us know how we're doing and how we can continue to help you, to empower you to teach special education home. So thanks, everybody. Again, thank you to my guests, Matt and Jason, and have a great night, and we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.